Welcome to Coaching Culture, the podcast where we discuss how we can use sports and not let them use us. I'm JP Nervin, the founder of Thrive On Challenge, and the mission for this podcast is to connect leaders in athletics to help us create a transformational culture by building leadership and character. Now let's get started. You're listening to episode 71, Culture Building Lessons from football coach Kurt Hines. Well, I'm really, really excited to have Coach Kurt Hines on the podcast today. Coach Hines is a football coach at Coronado High School in San Diego, California, but he's actually originally from the Boston area, New England area. And so we're really excited to have him to share his experiences around culture and building culture. And he's also got some experience as far as the motivational speaking as well. Kurt, give us a little bit of background about yourself, man, and just your unique experiences in building culture from scratch and then also rebuilding.
Yeah, well, first of all, I appreciate you guys having me on. It's an honor to be with you guys. So my first year as head coach in New Hampshire, Bedford High School, we didn't have any seniors. So, you know, one of the things I truly believe with all my heart is competition breeds success. Well, my first year as head coach, if the kids weren't coming to the workouts or they weren't pushing themselves in the field, you know, I joke about it. I used to look around and be like, all right, I've got no one to say to them, hey, if you don't want to fight for it, they're going to do it. There was no one breathing down their neck. So long story, very short. My first 3 years as head coach, first year we lost every game. And we lost so bad, you know, at the end of every game, court, people walk through and they say, great job. They didn't even lie to us. It was a brand new facility. They just looked at me and said, beautiful field, great stadium. we were so bad, no one even lied to us and said, great game. So part of that was I had inherited three young coaches who had just come from playing college football. So at the end of the season, I had a whole coaching staff meeting with my players, not players, after that with my coaches. And I said, all right, let's talk about offense, defense, special teams, off season. And then I opened a huge can of worms. And I knew what I was doing, but I didn't know what the outcome was going to be. I asked my coaches, I said, I'm not going to change just for the sake of changing, but what's one thing you'd like me to see me do differently? And one of my coaches, it was like 15 seconds of silence, which felt like 15 minutes. He goes, I don't think the guys respect you. And I could feel myself getting red. I just wait. I'm like, well, what do you mean? He's like, I don't know. They just don't respect you. I'm like, give me one example. Do they show up late? Is the locker room a mess? Do they talk back? He's like, no, they don't show up late. They're respectful. They do all that. And he hummed it hard for a little bit, but he said, they're not afraid of you. And that's a moment I'll never forget because I remember looking at him. And now we're great friends now. We used to butt heads a lot the first 3 years. But I looked at him and I said, those are two completely different things. I don't ever want my players to fear me. And he just said, well, that's what I'm used to in college. And that's how I feel like a head coach should be. I said, I respectfully disagree. So really for me, building a culture didn't start for me until the end of my first year. And what I mean by that is I was so new into coaching, I didn't even think about culture. I was just thinking about X's and O's and loving the young men, but didn't think about how you implement that. So for me, that's a moment I'll never forget because I had told this other coach, if a player fears me, I might feel tough. But if they're suicidal or parents are going through a divorce or if they're feeling like life just, you know, keeps punching them in the face, they're never going to come to me to confide in me and ask me for help. And for me, that's really what coaching is about, raising young men, helping parents raise young men to become even greater young men. So it was kind of a cool moment. That second year, we won 2 games. Third year, we won 5 games. And then my last 4 years as head coach, we went to the state championship 3 out of the 4 years. And each time it was in a higher division. So my final year, we were 11-0 in Division One, had gone to the state championship, lost, but just built a brand new weight room. And my wife and I were like, this is it. Like, this is our home. This is where we're going to stay for 30 years. And then our oldest daughter, who had come out to California, San Diego to go to school, called and said that she was pregnant. And our hearts leapt. And at the same time, I thought, I'm moving. Because I knew we didn't want to be grandparents on the side of the country. So that was one of the hardest things I ever had to do was tell my team that I was moving on. And then, you know, some of the young men were crying. I was crying like a 13-year-old schoolgirl. Like, I was a mess. But the cool thing was that we were able to build a culture where, you know, my final 3 years, we had 144 players in the program. freshmen through seniors. For New England football, that's a lot. So we built something where it was really based around, you know, everyone says, hey, we're a football family or a baseball family or a soccer family or basketball. But I really feel like we were a family. We did things for the community and in the community. It was just something that really was like one of my own children. You know, it was a baby of mine that I raised with the help of a lot of other young men, other coaches, but it was heartbreaking to leave. And then when we moved out here to California, that's when I was an assistant at one program. And then just last year, took the head coaching program over at Coronado.
I love the story about your assistant giving you the feedback on they don't fear you. And I think that because that's one of the, for me, one of the most core principles of transformational coaching. You can't be a transformational coach if you operate from a place of fear. You have to operate exactly from a place of love. And that's so cool to see that you knew that early on, right? Like, even though you didn't have the culture piece, you weren't very focused on that. And I think that's so important because I think so often when we try to talk about building culture and like building a great culture, we try to substitute strategies of behavior to replace really what it has to have is this kind of way of being, as they say in the book. I think it's the Anatomy piece by the Arbinger Institute. Like when you try to substitute a strategy of behavior for a way of being, your heart posture, your way towards people, it will always fail. And so from the very early onset of the of your experience there, you had that right. You had that heart right where you were trying to, at least trying to operate from a place of love and not fear. And I think that's huge. Now, my question is, you went into a program, never, you know, started it there in, you know, Massachusetts area, the New England area. And then you go and you have, now you've started one at Coronado High School. And there's got to be some differences there, but really what has been the same? What did you take from that experience? And now, you know, it's so important and starting a culture in a new place like Coronado.
Great question. The short answer, and it sounds so cliche, is it's people, 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 people. It's for me, you know, I think, and I'm not calling myself a great by any means, but I think some of the greatest in sports and business in this, you know, as pastors and whatever, any walk of life, they don't think of themselves as great. Because what they do for the two of you, for myself, is it's just natural. It's just, well, and what I mean by that is you love people. I truly believe if you love someone and they know that you're not part of their agenda or their game plan to further promote your success or your goal for you. I often tell people my teaching strategy in fourth grade is not a lot different than my coaching strategy. And it's really not, because I've had parents, and it's such a blessing. My parents in the 24 years I've taught, that say little Timmy or little Sally or whatever, that they love school now and they hated it. And I'm not a better teacher than other teachers. It's just I make a connection, a personal connection. The interesting thing is when I took over at Coronado, I was told by the administration there were five coaches that were choosing at that moment to stay on staff. And two of them had applied for the head coaching job. Now, one had been there for 8 years and played at Notre Dame. So right away, I started doubting myself. Why, they made a mistake. This dude played at Notre Dame. I played at a small division three college in New Hampshire. You start to second guess yourself. And the other head coach had been there for 15 years. So I was warned, and I knew this anyways, but one of my good friends out here I'd coached with at a different school said, hey, be real careful of those guys because they could be in there just to mess things up for you, just talk with the community behind your back or whatever and undermine you to get you out of there so they can prove that they were the right decision. I believed that was a possibility, but it was nothing further from the truth. I went in our first meeting and I said, listen, I said, this is my why. We talk to our guys all the time about why, but this is my passion. This is what we're going to do as far as culture, because now I had experience with the good and the bad of culture. This is what we're going to do for offense, because I'm an offensive guy. This is what we're going to do with our strength and conditioning. And then I shared with them what I was open to. I'm not really a defensive guy. So what do you guys want to do? What have you done? And after a 30-minute conversation with some of that, I asked, and I looked at the guy who had been there for 15 years. I said, Mark, what are some things you've done at Coronado that you're passionate about, you don't want to let go of? And he looks at me, just smiled. He goes, Coach, we need new blood. We need you here. And it was such a humbling thing to have him say that, because they hadn't had that passion. And they had had some success. In 2015, they won the CIF championship for their division. And I'm not going to mention the other coach's name that stepped down. It was just different. They didn't have the leadership they felt they needed. And my first year as head coach in Coronado, we were 2-8. Now, part of that was we only had two returning starters. And then a huge part of that was those are the only two guys that had been in the program for 4 years. And that's mind-blowing to me. To have a school that's over 100 years old, at this point, this day and age, to have only two young men who are seniors who have been for 4 years, it was mind-blowing. So I knew my first goal and still my main goal is changing, recreating that culture there. And the second goal was to build a weight room, which we just completed, because I think that's where culture is built, in the offseason, in the weight room with the guys year-round. So we were 2-8 my first year. We were 7-3 this year. And I know that ebb and flows. You know, I think people that don't get the heart of coaching and really making the connection with people think success, you know, looks like this. And it's not. You know, some of my greatest years, one of the greatest years I'll never forget back in New Hampshire, was a year that we got knocked out in the first round of the playoffs. I think we were 7-4 or something like that. So we didn't have it was a good record. It wasn't the best. But I'll probably remember some of those moments more than the 11-0 season because of the connections with the young men, the families, and the coaches.
One question I have, just following up with what talking about before, and you were, you know, this discussion of the connections being the foundation of how you build your culture. When we're out in Boulder, you know, that conversation about coaching from a place of love was kind of a big theme for the weekend. And one of the conversations that stemmed from that is that something that you intentionally teach? I mean, do you use the language, we're learning to love each other and, you know, we're going to build this program based on love? Or is it something that you just do and people sort of figure it out?
That's a great question. I have to say, in my fourth grade class, I've done a thing called quote of the day for years. I put a quote on the board, the kids write it down, then they reflect on it and we talk about it. So I'm always looking for quotes. I always love these quotes. One, I don't remember who this came from. It's not my own, but there's a quote that says, "Your actions speak so loudly, I can barely hear what you're saying." The reason that came to mind is, you know, I use the word love with my players all the time, in front of their parents, in front of the other players, in front of the coaches, and look at them and say, "I love you." And they understand it's a love that, as they get to know me, is not based on their physical ability. I don't love our starting quarterback more than I love our third string left tackle that can't put his helmet on straight. but you know, you love them for who they are. So I do use that verbiage all the time. But I think even more than that, if I told them I love them all the time, but when they did something wrong, they saw a hate in my eyes or they saw a complete different change in my tone, they wouldn't believe the words. So, and I get intense. I get veins popping all the time. I scream all the time, but it's never derogatory and it's not at them. You know, it's just for that's just who I am. I'm intense. But it was funny because the coach that I was talking about in New Hampshire, who is now the head coach. I wrote a letter for him because I have nothing but respect for him and he's grown a lot. He's always been a great football mind. I do coaches meetings at the end of every season. I meet with my coaches one-on-one, talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, give them a challenge, something I want them to work on and ask for honest feedback for me. And when I met with him privately, and that was about a week after our meeting with everyone, when we had that conversation, he would go off on things. And I remember saying to him, "I don't mind if you do that. You know, we have no swearing policy. If a coach swears, they do 25 pushups and it becomes an issue, they leave." And I had one coach I got rid of because of that. But I remember looking at him, just he and I privately, and I said, "Just after you get on a kid, before you walk up the field, put your arm around him, let him know you love him." And he goes, "Hines, I'm not going to tell the kid that I love him." And it's just that it wasn't how he was raised, you know. And then not that he had a loving family, but that just wasn't part of who he was. I said, "Great, don't use the word love, but look at them, say something from the heart to let them know why you're getting on them." And I truly believe he has started to, you know, to embrace that now. I think one of the biggest mistakes coaches make in coaching is they look at a successful coach at any level, high school, college, the NFL, and they see how they interact with their players, and they think, "I have to be like that." For anyone that's been in coaching long enough now, we know that you can be a yeller and a screamer and never celebrate and be very successful, or you can be a guy that smiles, is happy, that's buddy with the players, and is very successful. So I think one of the greatest things we need to teach, not just young coaches, but coaches that are still trying to find their way, is just to be true to themselves. Because I think when the players know that you are authentically being who you are and you say you love them, they know that's coming from a place that's not fake, if that makes sense.
I just want to bounce off of that, you know, your response to Nate's question, because I think you've touched on something critical here. You know, your quote about your actions are so loud, I can't hear what you're saying. I would say what we say, like whether we say I love you or not, is not as important as the things that we're doing. But then even more, what you touched on there isn't so much about our actions, but the way we're doing, kind of what I touched on earlier, our way of being towards people. People sense that. People sense whether there's love in our heart for them, or whether if we're operating from a place of love or we're operating from a place of fear. They sense our way of being to them more than anything we say or even sometimes do, right? People, you know, when someone's doing something and they're looking for something in return, right? We can sense and feel that. And I think young people and adults, regardless of our level of what we're coaching at, they can sense that. And so I think that, you know, we talked about that authenticity. I think that's really critical, that we're being authentic, we're being true to ourselves, but we're also making sure and we're constantly revisiting our why, right? Like, yeah. Why are we doing this? And you talk a lot about that, the power of why, as one of your core principles. You talk about this when you go out and speaking on your podcast. So how do you approach that with your team, and how do you approach that with your coaches, and how do you constantly revisit that why yourself as a person too?
Yeah, that for me, that's everything. And I had shared offline with you just a day or two ago. After our first loss, my first year as head coach in Coronado, the other team was better than us. Take nothing away from them. But you could see no fire or passion in the players' eyes and some of the coaches. It was just like, all right, well, we're used to this. Just let's get out of here. And that was just eating at me all night. So I knew what I was going to do driving into the coaches' meeting Saturday morning. So I told the coaches, and what happened was I went to the team meeting and I told the players, and I get very animated when I speak. But I said, I didn't leave New Hampshire to come here to coach a team of guys that don't want to be here and don't care about losing. And blah, 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 you know, so I kind of went off about, hey, you know, I've had it. This is the day one after our first loss. And I said, I told the administration, but I figured I'd owe it to you guys. I'm done. And you saw all their eyes get big and they're like, wait a minute. I said, I'm done. I'm not coaching like this. And then walked out of the room and it was silent. I joke about it now, saying, thank God they didn't start tearing. You know, I really would have been done. But I remember I walked in the hallway for a second, waited about 5-10 seconds, and I walked back in and I said another thing, and it was silent. And the coaches knew what I was doing, but the players didn't. I said, imagine if I was serious. And you kind of saw him look, you know, confused eyes, like some guy, he's not quitting. What's going on? And the guy, I said, without getting on a soapbox, here's what's wrong with our country. Life punches us in the face, and we just throw in the towel. It's so easy just to give up in marriage, in business, in anything. When life gets hard, we as a society or a people just throw in the towel. I said, guys, I'm not going anywhere. And I reminded them about, I didn't go through their track record of my success or losses in New Hampshire, but I said, the only reason I left New Hampshire was because God blessed me with a grandson. That's the only reason. Family. I said, for me, my why is faith, family, football. And I said, why I coach is not just to get rings, but it's to change lives. I said, and some of you get this, some of you understand. So for me, it's the why truly coaching, because I love football. I love the violence of it. I love the chess match. I love connecting with gentlemen like yourselves. But for me, the why is it's a platform to empower people. I have a captive audience. You know, my first year as head coach in Coronado, we had 50 players. This past season, we had 63. My goal this coming year is to have 70. And the reason numbers don't make you a better team, but the more kids I can get coming out, the more people I feel like I can help change their lives. And that itself is part of the success. So how I share my why with my players constantly is after a win or a loss, just having those one-on-one conversations with players. And it does take more time. You know, I meet with my captains year round. We vote for captain at the end, the very last practice of the season. We vote for captains for the next season. And I do that because I like to meet with our captains year round and really build and develop that relationship with them. So understanding what their why is.
You want to talk a little bit more about just establishing those one-on-one connections with kids? I mean, every sport, you know, that we interact with are different in terms of the numbers. You know, one of the benefits of being a basketball coach is we've got, you know, 14 kids on the varsity level and 32 in the program. And so we'd like to have more. It does create a little bit easier opportunity to be able to build some of those relationships because you just don't have the quantity that you do in some other sports. But I can imagine that that's got to be a challenge as you're building your numbers, is to be able to maintain that level of one-on-one connection and intimacy with each player. You want to talk a little bit about how you guys strive to do that?
Yeah, I'll start off by saying I don't do it as well as I should. I think there's hasn't been a season yet that I think, you know, we have our end of the season banquet coming up this Sunday, and I talk about each of the seniors. We don't talk about the underclassmen because it would take forever, but we talk about, you know, the JV program and the varsity and then each senior. And we had four seniors that came out this year for the first time. And one of them, two of them, I didn't connect with as much. You know, there's two young men. One was tiny, one was big, but not aggressive. Both great young men. And through a lot of thought and prayer, I was able to reflect on what I can say about them personally. And I do have some things. But so I just want to say I'm not the expert. I failed at that. Those two young men, I don't think I failed them. I know I can make connections with them, but not as well as I should have. How I do try to do it is I do the strength and conditioning with my team year round. And I do it because I love lifting myself. But that's the time. It's hard during the season, during a practice, when we have our practice schedule down to the minute and we go and it's fast paced, to really connect with anyone. You know, you can high five someone or yell at them in a good way, say great job, but that's not really connecting with someone. So with the strength and conditioning, what I try to do is connect with players and just say, hey, let me work out with you guys today. So just work out with one or two players on our own. And that, as I'm spotting them, as they're spotting me, as we're literally sweating together and pushing each other, there's an unspoken bond there. We're okay, coaches working side by side with me. But then I do just have conversations with them. You know, the easy ones are, how's school? You know, good. Well, what's good? What's your definition of good? And getting to the bottom of that. And then talking with their family. And what I do prayerfully is, if there's ever someone that says something that kind of just kind of sends a message to me. Someone's like, oh, your family's good. But I can see it in their eyes. I'll ask them after practice, hey, let's go chat for a minute. And I usually preface it by saying, hey, you don't need to say anything here, but how is your family? And I ask them the exact same question again, but it's a one-on-one behind closed doors, you know. And sometimes kids are like, we're good, coach. We're good. And you just realize that he's not a very affectionate or open person. There's nothing wrong with that. And sometimes I've had tears and people share the things that are life-changing. So I think that's huge. As far as the coaching staff, I think it's important. Whenever I've been head coach, it's been two different times now, but we never meet on Sundays, never. Because my why is faith, family, football. And when I hear coaches talk about, my family knows I'm gone during the season, well, shame on you, because that's why most coaches have failing marriages, if they don't put their family first. I ran into that when I was in Bedford. I had, with our first two seasons being zero wins and two wins, my coaches who were just out of college said, we need to meet on Sundays. And I'm like, we're not, we will never meet on Sundays. Unless we're having a cookout with our families and we're not talking football, we're not going to meet on Sundays. So I think the sharing of the why and getting to know them on a personal level, really, I think sometimes we overthink things. It's just spending time with them. It's just making that connection and talking about things that aren't football or anything else, and just getting to know them as individuals.
Well, I think one of the other things that's so critical in building a culture is that, you know, we strive for our kids to be loved in our program. But one of the things that we tell them is it doesn't always necessarily mean that their strongest connection is going to be with me, the coach, that I'm going to be the one that's filling that, you know, that love or that belonging bucket for them. If we're trying to help them facilitate those relationships among each other or with an assistant coach. But our failure, you know, when we look at it, is if somebody comes through the program for a year or for 4 years and they don't feel like they were loved, you know, in the course of that time, again, it isn't necessarily from me personally with every single kid. And I think sometimes coaches put all this pressure on themselves, like, well, I don't have a five-star relationship with every kid. Obviously, everybody's going to connect differently with others. And sometimes we carry some guilt from that because we don't feel like at the end of the year, like you said at the banquet, that, you know, it's easy to talk about your quarterback or your point guard or the guys that you're in the meetings with all the time. But the reality of it is that not every kid responds to those outreach as a relationship either. And I think that's where we, you know, in our program, we work with our captains and our assistant coaches, and we talk about who's reaching this kid, or if this kid seems to be struggling or they're not quite as engaged as some of the others, who's the best person to reach out and try to connect with them. And like I said, you know, that's sometimes kids are just not going to be receptive to that or not from the head coach. But I think the more you try to facilitate opportunities for connections with somebody, the more likely they are to feel that belonging and want to stick around and be part of it and have their lives changed as a result of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. And this some people might connect with what I'm going to say here, and some people might be turned off. And I apologize, guys, stop listening to you guys, or at least this episode. But for me, the greatest transformational leader of all time is Christ. You know, and he had 12 disciples. He knew he couldn't connect with everyone and change everyone. So he poured into 12 people specifically more than anyone else. So not that I try to pour into our captains more, but as I mentioned earlier, I meet with our captains on a weekly basis. So, and I haven't phrased it yet. I'm going to steal what you just said there, but you're right that they can be that one, they can be that connection, whether it's a senior to a freshman or a sophomore to an upper class player that's brand new to the program. I do often in the weight room when I see someone getting ready to squat a heavy weight or do a difficult exercise, I just kind of do this now. And the kids know that means, hey, let's start chatting for them, let's start talking for them. And sometimes I'll just pull someone aside in the weight room and say, hey, do me a favor, find someone you don't know that well yet today and work out with them. And the kids have embraced that. You know, I've been very proud of them. You know, it's been awesome. We have one of our starting, he doesn't know yet. We announced our captains, we voted a few weeks ago, but we announced it at this banquet Sunday. But one of my linemen, the past 2.5 weeks, he's been working out with the freshman lineman. Now, athletically, that means this freshman, because he's working out with a senior and being pushed by a senior and trying to be like that, this kid's going to be great in a few years. But it's amazing because you see this kid, Kai is his name, who is just selflessly trying to help someone else out. And that's when I think culture really starts to take over. And you hear it all the time, but when players are doing it without coaches asking them to, that's when you know you're starting to get somewhere.
Coach, I think your approach towards your team, towards your players, you know, and your assistants, you know, just seeing them as people, I think it's just phenomenal. I think, you know, we mentioned this before, that the football culture in America is different. It's different, I think, because it's just a different sport. It's more violent, like you talked about. There's also the numbers thing. There's just large amounts of people. I think the tradition behind it. And I think that it's just a little bit different in some ways. There's obviously some stereotypes around football players as well, too, that I think, you know, you do a fantastic job of breaking free from those kind of stereotypes. One of those things is that whole Sunday approach on Sunday. You know, it's like Tony Dungy is legendary for this, of being a guy that, you know, was committed to creating space for his coaches to go home to their families and stuff like that. And to see you do that's phenomenal. But you've been successful, right, at turning around this program in California, and also incredibly successful, not just in transforming lives of people, but in the wins column, right? Like nearly perfect seasons and stuff like that. So you've been able to do it and still create space for faith and family.
When I get home from what we started to do this year was, after every game, win or loss, we go to a local restaurant and watch the highlights, and sometimes they're painful, of other teams against us. But we watch that and eat together. So when I get home sometimes, I'm watching film until 2:30 in the morning, and then I wake up at 5:30, watch a little bit more, and go to the coaches' meeting and practice. But really what gives me sanity there is I know that on Saturday I'm going to have a coaches' meeting, we're going to have a practice, we'll meet again briefly as coaches. But typically from 12 o'clock in the afternoon Saturday until Monday morning, I'm not with my coaches. And I love them, but that is complete family time. Saturday, usually a date night with my wife and I. Sunday, it's a family day. We hang out with the kids or grandkids, or we go to the beach or whatever. It's so important because, once again, this is my most important ring, you know, my wedding ring. And I unfortunately know too many coaches who have a lot more championship rings than I'll probably ever have, but have suffered and lost this one. And if we're really practicing what you're preaching about, trying to raise better young men, that means I don't want them to dig really deep in the fourth quarter, but with a relationship struggles when they're married, to throw in the towel. I want them to dig really deep in the fourth quarter, and when they're struggling with their marriage, maybe they will or won't think back to football. But lessons that they were taught, or even subconsciously, say to themselves, I'm not giving up. This is where I'm going to dig deep. So it's important to have that balance.
Nate, what a phenomenal conversation there with Coach Hines. For me, it was so refreshing and actually encouraging to hear a coach out there that, you know, in some ways has made it big, but is still very much valuing the things that he claims to value. I think there's things that we claim to value as coaches, but often our behaviors, the systems that we put in place, don't match up with that when it comes to coaching. And here you have a coach that says he values faith, family, and then football. And what's he do? He doesn't just give his players off on Sunday, but he gives his entire staff off on Sunday, which I think is very, very rare in the football coaching community to give your staff off. Usually that's a day where they're spending 10 hours of their time doing film together and breaking down the next opponent. So it was so encouraging to hear a coach that valued the things that he claims to value in so many aspects of his program.
Well, for sure. And the thing I really appreciate about Coach is that, you know, he's doing it the right way in terms of valuing his people. As a basketball coach, you always wonder what some of these things might look like in another context. And it's awesome to see how he's been incredibly intentional, despite a much larger roster than what I deal with on a day-to-day basis, of investing in his players, of investing in those relationships. And, you know, I love that quote that he had toward the end of the interview there, that his goal isn't to get rings, it's to change lives. And I think when you look at his success, those things aren't necessarily mutually exclusive, but he's got them in the right order. And that's what makes his impact so significant on the lives of his players.
That's it for this episode. For this episode's Coaching Notes and other resources to build your culture and grow as a coach, be sure to subscribe to the weekly newsletter at thriveonchallenge.com. Also, follow us on Twitter. Nate's at Coach N. Sanderson, and I'm at JP Nurbin. We'd love to hear from you. As always, if you found value in this episode, please support the podcast by sharing with other coaches and on social media.